So we are here right now. This is Jopper Papa Pump Penizai with my co-host John DeMet Maz. And we got an awesome guest today. Really well-known amateur fighter here in America. Most people know him as the Muay Thai guy. And you probably know him better off as Sean Fagan, my main man. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, man. Our pleasure. And, you know, right now Sean's literally living the dream. For those of you who follow him online, he's in Thailand. So how's Thailand treating you?
Thailand's good, dude. I'm at the same spot I've been the past few times, getting reacquainted with some old friends and old training partners. So it's been good so far.
So, you know, Sean, what I really wanted to do is I just kind of wanted people to, because our outreach on this podcast is just even beyond Muay Thai, kettlebell fitness, lifestyle. So I want more people to know your story. So
just hot chicks.
Hot chicks too. Hot chicks too. Yeah. Even though you know, you have somebody. How did you get started in martial arts, bro?
Well, originally I was always a team sport player. I played baseball and hockey while I was growing up. And I really found myself enjoying hockey a little bit more because of the physicality of it. And I always found myself in scrums and fights during hockey. And I would always go for the bigger guys on the team and just try to start shit with them whenever I could. My mom realized this, and after one of the hockey games, she was like, you know what? Instead of fighting people on the ice, why don't you join a boxing gym? Kind of saying it as a joke. I was like, you know what? That's actually a pretty good idea. So I started boxing when I was like 16, 17. And I didn't take it too seriously until a little bit later down the road. Boxing led to going to an MMA gym, wanting to be a cage fighter and be cool like that. But I didn't really enjoy the jiu-jitsu and wrestling as much. And I just fell in love with Muay Thai. And once that happened, I was fortunate enough to win a large sum of money from a poker tournament. And then I flew to Thailand, had my first couple of fights, and the rest is history.
Now, so you're saying your first fight after you won that poker tournament was in Thailand, or it was just along the way?
No, it was in Thailand, because I was having trouble getting matched up at my gym in New York, and it was kind of frustrating. So when I won the money, I was like, well, what can I do that involves traveling and fighting? And it just made sense to go to Thailand, because there's no doubt that I would be able to get a fight there. So I had my first three fights there.
Now, did you dabble in any other martial arts when you were a kid? Like, did you have any interest in, like, say, karate or taekwondo, kind of how most of us got our start? Or did you just bypass that right into the hockey?
Honestly, it was just kind of, like I said, I was mainly a team sport player. And the team sports was great and everything. But no matter how well I did, my team could still lose. And that was rather frustrating. And then finding an outlet like boxing made me realize that even though it is team-oriented in a sense, all the pressure's on you. And I kind of like having all the pressure on me and knowing that my results lead directly from my training and my ability to put on a show.
Now, before you went to Thailand, you know, you finally had your first coach over here in the States. So I just kind of want to give him a plug too. Who was your last coach before you went to Thailand, and what made you kind of – because we both have gone back and forth and talked about how we kind of ran our own camp, and it was cool. Before you left, you actually found somebody you entrusted with that position. So who was your coach before you went, and what kind of made him a fit for you?
Well, I've had a handful of great coaches, first off. Let me just give them a shout-out. JJ from Black and Blue was my first Muay Thai coach, and without him teaching me the basic fundamentals, I wouldn't be where I am today. And also one of my boxing coaches, John Nikolovic, he taught me a lot as well. And without him, I wouldn't be as good of a boxer as I am, which has won me a lot of my fights. But my most recent trainer, Brendan Levi from Evolution Muay Thai, he just it's funny how we ended up meeting together, because I was supposed to end up training at Seton Muay Thai in New York. That's why I moved down there. And as I moved down there, they actually matched me up with a fighter from Seton Gym. So naturally, I couldn't train at their gym when I'm fighting one of their guys. So I reached out to a couple people, and Brandon was one of the top ones. I went to his gym, Evolution, and once I went to the gym, he made me feel like family. He welcomed me with open arms, and he set the time aside to work with me and get me prepared for the fight. And he just made me feel like part of the family. And him doing all that with his own spare time, and making me feel so comfortable made it really hard for me to leave the gym. So even when I did go to – I won my fight, and even – though I went to Seton Gym to try it out, it just wasn't the same. And no disrespect to Seton, they have a bunch of great fighters, and they do their own thing over there. But the atmosphere that Brandon created for me was something that really just stuck out, and just training there was really like an extension of my family.
Now, you were saying earlier that you were having trouble getting some matchups here in the States, and you said you went to Thailand for one of your earlier fights. Why Thailand? Why not maybe Holland? Why not Japan? What kind of attracted you there?
A couple reasons. Number one was more. Thailand is much cheaper than Europe, and so being able to go to Southeast Asia.
It's the hookers, isn't it, bro?
The initial expense is just the flight over. But once you get the flight over, it's really not that bad in terms of living costs and training costs. And it's a mecca of Muay Thai, and I wanted to kind of immerse myself in the culture and the surroundings that grew the sport, and it was just a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and it really did change my outlook on life, not just from the Muay Thai, but meeting the people, the country, and all that kind of stuff as well. I do want to go to Holland one day, though. That would be pretty epic.
Me and you both, bro. Me and you both.
Were you able to link up with any good camps while when you've been training over in Thailand?
I wouldn't say like any of the top camps like Sit Man Chai or Sisson Pinong, but I've been training at a handful of gyms that like I said about Evolution, have made me feel like a part of their family, and we all go out together, we go to the fights together. All the trainers has been really well. I went to Patong Boxing Gym. Right now I'm training at Nita Muay Thai, which is a new gym, but the trainers there are great, and the owner has been so welcoming and good to me. And yeah, I've met a lot of great people through the couple gyms I've trained at. But I plan on training at a couple other gyms during this day as well.
So what's a day like in Thailand for you? And like right now you got a fight. I know you're focusing on training. So just tell us anywhere between now and 2 weeks ago, what was a normal day for Sean Fagan like?
Normal day would be I would wake up, I'd eat some breakfast, I'd go for a little run every other day, I would say. And then I would hit the gym and do about an hour and a half, 2 hours of training. Finish off training with some stretching and foam rolling, come home, eat a post-workout meal of some sort, take a nap, wake up, do some writing and reading, get ready for my second training, train, come home, eat, sleep, and I do it all over again. No. And that was pretty much day in and day out. But I was mentioning before we started recording that the two-a-days are kind of – they're pretty intense, especially if you're not used to it and you come from a Western background of Thai boxing or any martial art for that matter. So every once in a while I'll take a morning off or afternoon off based on how my body and mind are feeling. But for the most part, I'd be trying to train twice a day whenever I could.
Now, being over in Thailand, is it hard to get access to like high-quality products like supplements, vitamins, just regular whole foods and –
Well, supplements are more expensive here, that's for sure. I'm fortunate enough to be sponsored by PNP Supplements, which has all natural, really safe pre-workout, whey protein, and endurance supplements that I've been able to use during my training camp. And I feel like without those, I wouldn't be able to train as hard as I am, especially because the nutrition kind of lacks in most of the Thai food. When it comes to equipment is pretty damn cheap here. So I'm looking to buy myself a few of that. Whole food and everything. The food here is not to bash America, but none of this food that I'm eating is processed or have any type of additives or growth hormones. It's all natural, all Thai food that they get from their street corner, from their farms, from their chickens, from the cows. So I definitely feel a lot better eating the food here than I do when I kind of slack off back at home, eat some TV dinners and all that good stuff.
So now, you know, a lot of people who have been to Thailand, their experience with the training, you know, the common word is it's repetitive. It's a lot of pad work, maybe some bag work, maybe some clinch. So I know you're saying you're doing training twice a day. What are each session like, if you can share that with us?
Yeah, definitely. I usually get there first thing is I foam roll. I've been a big fan of foam rolling since my friend Brett Hoffman, who's an athletic trainer. He just showed me a couple routines with the foam roller that's really helped loosen me up and get me warmed up before any training. So I usually foam roll for about 10 minutes. After that, I'll skip rope, loosen up my body, just like do some twists and more ballistic movements than static stretches. Get loosened up, wrap up my hands, do some shadow boxing for about a round or two. After that, usually my trainer calls me over and we'll ease into pad work, do around 3 to 5 rounds of pads, depending on the whether it's morning or afternoon and how I'm feeling. And the pad work is pretty repetitive, like you said, but my trainer has been really good at implementing new techniques and showing me little tricks that Thais like to do during their fight, so hopefully I can use that during my next fight. Then after that, most days I'll finish up with some heavy bag work. Depending on who's there, I'll do some clinching, some light technique sparring, and then I'll finish up with some abs, stretching, and then a foam roll to get out any loose or tight knots and muscle cramps.
Now, the rounds that you do, are they 3, 4, or 5 minute rounds?
They're whatever the trainer decides. Yeah, so like there's no timer or anything. He just kind of goes until he feels like it's around 3 or 4 minutes. And I'm assuming it's around that time. I mean, I have some kind of internal clock since I've been doing this for a little while. It seems around 3 or 4 minutes, but some of them seem like a whole lot longer though too.
Now, you mentioned a bunch of pad work and doing some calisthenics. How about sparring? Do you guys do like a heavy sparring day or kind of not? What's typical over there?
Sparring for the most part is pretty light and technical. Every once in a while there'll be an asshole in the gym that comes that's about like 3 times my size and feels the need to try to lay his hands on me as hard as he can. And
does he preference?
I just avoid those people because they're fucking assholes, but that's what it is.
Does he say first, you want to go 50%?
Yeah, does he get that pre-train?
This guy in particular, he was like this big-ass tan Russian dude, and he just thought he was so big and strong that he didn't even want to spar me. And then when he did spar me, he's going like pretty fucking hard.
What's the name,
and
Boris?
I was handling it fine. I was hitting him back hard. And before I even sparred him, I got poked in the eye with a thumb, so I started having a shiner on my eye. Before I even started sparring him, then he noticed it, and he was like, oh, I don't want to hurt you, I don't want to spar you anymore, and I was just like, whatever, I don't want to deal with this, and so I started moving with guys my size who were actually in control when they're sparring, and it was a lot more beneficial for me.
Well, especially like you were saying, you're looking to fight, I know when me and you were talking, you were saying one of your goals is to fight about 10 times while you're there. You can't afford a big dude, a big Boris like that trying to break you, you know, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's just the gym fighters that they don't actually fight in the ring, so they feel like they need to get their aggression out in the gym. And, I mean, each to their own, but I just try to avoid those people. And usually there's at least one in every gym, if not more. So I just do my best to just respectfully decline them and just move around with the people who know what they're doing. Because the people that have the most experience usually are the most controlled and most knowledgeable when it comes to sparring and not looking to win at sparring like some other people do.
Absolutely. Now, we got to go into this. Tell us about the Muay Thai Guy website. You know, how did it all come about? Because it's funny, that's an idea I'm sure several people had, but for you, you're the one who took the initiative and really put the work in to make it successful. It's funny because I thought of an idea like that like 6 years ago, but I'm lazy. So the fact that you did it, it's like awesome. So how did it all come about, and where's the big picture with the Muay Thai Guy website?
It's all pretty crazy. Now, whenever I talk about it or think about it, it's just how crazy how big it's gotten the past few years. But it originally started as just a training journal, and I wanted to share my amateur career, my training thoughts, and all that kind of stuff, and try to help other people while I was improving in my own training. And more or less it was just a way to hold myself accountable, so this way if I'm writing out all my thoughts and my training schedule and people are reading it, like, they're gonna expect me to continue doing this. So once I started doing it, it kind of just kept growing. People started emailing me and messaging me about getting more tips and how helpful it's been, and like I said, it just kept growing and growing and growing, and now it's become like this juggernaut, which is so, it can be overwhelming at times because I'll get so like 20 messages a day on my Facebook, 10 emails, Twitter retweets, and all this other shit. And it's great to get all this attention, and I love interacting with the fans and everything. But to be honest, I had no idea it was going to get to this level of exposure and with the whole entire Muay Thai community. But the fact that I've been able to connect with so many like-minded people and so many top fighters through my podcast and just talking through them online, it's been really, like I said, just a crazy-ass experience, but it's been really rewarding.
Now, I found your page of information, too, when you did the interview with Joffer, I guess a few weeks or a few months back, and I clicked on some of your links, and I'm like, oh, my God, this guy has hundreds of thousands of likes on Facebook. I was shocked, and for me personally, I'd like to know what was like the turning point, the defining point for the Muay Thai guy to kind of go from a little startup project to having hundreds of thousands of followers. Like, how did that happen?
It was more of a mindset shift than anything. I just decided that like this was something that I could really invest my time and effort in and make into a product or service, more or less. And I've been able to use it as leverage to get sponsorships here in Thailand, so I'm able to live and train here for free. I've been able to sell some of my ebooks on here, which has helped supplement my training. And it's not like I'm making a lot of money on this website. I'm barely making enough to get by, but I'm making enough, and it's able to give me the freedom to train. And I guess what the turning point was the idea that this website could help people, and in return, it could give me the freedom to go to Thailand, to train full time, to not have to worry about work, which is the dream of a lot of fighters. And I'm just fortunate enough and appreciative enough of the support that I get through the site to be able to chase my dreams and pursue my goals, which I know a lot of people aren't able to do.
So what were you doing for work before running the website and kind of fighting in your amateur level? You did mention you won a large poker tournament. Were you a professional poker player beforehand?
No, I was never a professional poker player. I just happened to really love poker. And I got lucky enough to win an online poker tournament that just cashed in some money. But before that, I had a bunch of jobs. I was a lifeguard. I was a baseball instructor. I was an ice skating instructor. Personal trainer. But
What about that other job, the escort job?
Oh, the escort job. Yeah, I try to keep that down low.
That's my favorite one.
No, but I've been, when I was starting to really pursue my fight career, I was a waiter because it was the easiest way to make a schedule, make decent money, and be able to get coverage whenever I needed to fight or train. And so I was working at Red Lobster, which was a fun job, I guess, for the most part. But would I ever want to do it again? Not really, especially since now I don't even have to work for the most part, except for with my website. But the ability to make money serving tables, have a flexible work schedule, waiting was definitely one of the best jobs for me in terms of being able to do that and train and fight at the same time.
Now, I got to ask, out of all the people you have interviewed on the Muay Thai Guy website, on your podcast, who, and I, you know, if you can tell us straight up, who was your favorite that you interviewed?
Joffer Panizzai.
Joffer Panizzai, I knew it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, besides that, honestly, my most recent one with Eric Haycraft was so incredibly detailed and insightful. And
that's
that guy,
my dad right there.
It's just a wealth of knowledge, and I could just listen to him talk for a while, but his ability to put things into layman terms for beginners all the way to like seasoned professionals and able to just really get deep into the world of kickboxing, Muay Thai. He's a fight nerd, and he loves what he does, and he just is able to talk about it in a way that not many other people are able to talk about it. And other than that, though, I was able to interview John Wayne Parr from Australia. And for those who don't know, he's a 10-time world champion, probably one of the best-known Western fighters out there. And just to talk to him and Joseph Valtellini,
yeah,
and Kevin Ross, and yeah, there's just so many. It's been fucking unreal. I remember my first interview was with Kevin Ross, And it was just so crazy because he was like my favorite fighter watching as I was getting into Muay Thai. And the fact that he was my first interview, I was like shit in my pants when I was Skype calling. I was like, oh my God, I'm about to interview Kevin Ross. And then it still doesn't get old. I still like get nervous whenever I reach out to any of these fighters and or people of interest in the kickboxing and Muay Thai community, and I'm able to actually talk with them and pick their brains and to have the ability to talk with these top fighters for an hour. I feel like I'm so lucky to be able to do that, you know? I'm sure you know somewhat what I'm doing because you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, we've been super fortunate enough to have people kind of after we released the Mike Mahler podcast, that gave us a lot of validity like in the community. And now some people have been reaching out to us and wanting to be on the show and wanting to be around other like-minded people. Do you kind of have the same situation since you've kind of built up the Muay Thai guy that people are reaching out to you? You don't really have to chase down too many folks that they're, you know, they realize how much of a reach that your show has that they're seeking after you.
Well, yes and no. For the most part, the people that I want to interview aren't seeking after me because they're already at the top of the game and they pretty much already have their names out there and exposed. For the most part, the people that are coming to me are through Facebook and wanting me to share their page and share their fan page or fighter page and stuff. And as much as I would love to share everyone that wants me to share their page, I get at least 5 or 10 people asking me this a day. And if I were to do that, my whole page would be just blown up and watered down, and I wouldn't be able to really give the type of content that I want to get through my page. So I apologize if anyone's listening to this podcast and they've asked me to share their page, but it's just the way of the world, man.
We accept your apology.
Yes. So basically, just so everybody listening knows, Sean Fagan just told everybody to fuck themselves.
Yeah, just go do your own thing. Build your own Muay Thai guy website.
Now, because I'm waiting for you to come back so we can hit up my boy Eric Haycraft's gym. I mean, I'll tell you, he kind of ruined fighting for me. I'll say that.
Yeah, I bet.
So being that you're in Thailand right now, what's like the estimated time that you're going to spend there? How long do you think you're going to be there for?
Altogether, it's looking around probably 9 months to a year. Wow. Our initial plan was around a year, but the way that our schedule is looking like right now, we'll probably spend another couple of weeks here in Phuket. Then from Phuket, we're going to go up to the Surin province, which is northeast Thailand. I'm going to be living with one of my trainers, Dom, there. So it's going to be like really immersed in the Thai culture, and they're not going to – all the Thai people there don't really see a lot of Westerners, so it's going to be pretty unreal up there. And they're celebrating the festival of Songkran, which is this huge water festival, and they're going to be having like a week-long celebration of Muay Thai fights, of concerts, of dancing, of fireworks.
That's like,
and
their, we're gonna be there. That's like their, yeah, new year, gonna, right?
Yeah, it's going to be epic. And fights, there's going to be fights literally every day, and then the last day that they have this stacked card of Sanchai is fighting Victor Nabi from Australia, and Bolkow is fighting Mike 300. Run Gravy is fighting. A bunch of guys are fighting, and it's so cool the fact that I'm going to be there. And then we're going to be there for a couple weeks, and then after that, we're going to a small island, Koh Phangan. I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't know. But it's kind of away from the noise and distractions and has beautiful beaches. And even though the training is solid, it's not going to be like Bangkok training at one of the top gyms. Our goal is mainly just to do some soul searching, some relaxing, and just enjoy life for what it is, and not get burnt out by the day to day of just working our asses off all the time. And then after that, go to Chiang Mai, do some volunteering. And by the end of all that, we'll probably be home around December, I would think.
That's awesome. See, what I love about it is that, and this is kind of what I regret when I went, and this is why I feel like I got to go again, and anybody else who's had any kind of more negative experience, Thailand itself, I mean, the way you're talking about it, it makes you want to go when you look at the bigger picture, not just, okay, I'm going to train twice a day and I'm going to, you know, fight this and that. You're living it. You're experiencing everything. I think that's awesome.
Like we did in Italy for Worlds. Yeah. You know, we went and we ate some awesome local food and hung out, went to the beach and went to see different sights and stuff, not just eat, sleep, and breathe, fighting all day.
Yeah, I think that's so cool that you're doing that, man.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I was saying before about how my slogan is eat, sleep, breathe, Muay Thai. As much as I believe that, you can't, at least I personally can't do that. Otherwise, I get so burnt out mentally and physically. And my last trip to Thailand proved that. And I really did not enjoy my time here because all I was doing was sleeping, training, eating, training, sleeping, training. And that's literally my life. And there wasn't any balance to it. And although the Thai people can do that, and because they're kind of born and raised into it, it's something that I just can't do. And I wasn't able to experience the Thai culture for what it was. I was just living on the camp every once in a while. I'd step off the camp, but for the most part, I was just miserable. I wasn't enjoying my training. And when I'm not enjoying my training, I'm not getting it better. I'm not learning from it. And that comes back to the whole point of training twice a day. I've kind of realized after 6 or 7 years of training that training twice a day is just not for me. And interviewing guys like Joseph Altellini, who are on the top of their game, who train once a day for a couple hours, take 2 days off during the week, and are still able to fight against the top professionals in the world, it proves that quality is far more important than quantity. And at least that's the way that I think about it, and that's the way that I feel like would benefit me the most. Some people might be able to do the 2 days and grind it through, but for the most part, it's just not my cup of tea, if you know what I mean.
Totally agree. Sean, you were saying that you're going to stay for till December, so another, would you say, 8 or 9 more months? When you come back to the States, what's your plan? Do you have any kind of any projects in the mix, anything in the pipeline for when you touch back on American soil?
I have so many ideas. It's like hard to prioritize them because I have no idea where my mind's going to be by the time we get back. But to list a few, like I would love to fight professionally, but at the same time, I know I've talked to Joffer about once you go pro and make it a job, that's what it becomes. It becomes a job, and then you're not able to appreciate. Well, you still are able to appreciate it, but I tend to resent Muay Thai a little bit when all I'm doing is Muay Thai. So as much as I want to turn professional, which I probably will turn professional, I'm not saying I won't, but I would also like to enjoy some downtime and explore different activities. Maybe open a gym in my hometown. That was something me and my girlfriend were talking about. Doing a road trip around the U.S. to visit different gyms and teach seminars. The door's open for endless possibilities for the most part. But the three main ones are turn pro, ideally Fight for Glory or Lion Fight. Another one is to open up a gym in my hometown and kind of just build a business from there. And the third one is to do a cross-country trip and visit some friends at gyms that want some exposure, want me to teach a seminar or two.
See, that's awesome because what I like about it all is you have the big picture in mind. I mean, we've had several conversations about it, just mainly saying that individuals like you and me, this is kind of just what we do, you know. But the minute it becomes – you know, you have no other option but to do this, and it's your livelihood. We, you know, we're the weirdos who like to punch people for fun, you know?
Yeah.
And that's our choice. But the minute it becomes something that we're forced to do, it kind of changes. And I kind of like that you take that into account. You understand that. So you're looking at the bigger picture, which is, hey, you know, still having fun with your girl, traveling around, teaching the art in different avenues than just being, okay, I'm always going to be the fighter, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's some people are made to be fighters, and I think I'm a good fighter at that. But it's not all I am. I don't want to be classified as just a fighter. I want to be a teacher. I want to be ambassador for the sport. I want to be more than just one thing. And I think one of the key things for me that I've found throughout my life is that I need balance. I can't just be focused solely on one thing. Otherwise, I get burnt out and I end up not wanting to do it. So after this is my third time in Thailand, I've kind of realized that a little bit more and more. And as much as I love to fight for glory and be like number one in the world, I'm not sure if that's in the stars are aligned to make that happen. Although I'm probably going to try to make that happen. It's just a matter of taking it day at a time, learning from my mistakes, appreciating my successes, and just seeing where life takes me.
Now, you say you sometimes get a little bit too burnt out when you're training too much and being around the Muay Thai scene. Are you doing any other cross training, like maybe doing some CrossFit, or have any interest in getting involved in any other martial arts, like maybe judo or maybe karate, something to kind of take your mind away but not totally disappear out of the martial arts scene?
Yeah, I mean, I've done jiu-jitsu for about a year and a half, 2 years when I first started training MMA, and I've always been interested in other martial arts as well. For the most part, though, my cross training consists of yoga, believe it or not, and I'm like a peace, love, hippie kind of guy, I guess. And yoga has really helped open up my mind to be more aware of my surroundings and control my breathing. And honestly, yoga has made me a better fighter, not just because of flexibility and balance and coordination, but the ability to be more aware of what I'm doing. And other than that, I have done CrossFit before. Not gonna lie, I'm pretty beast at it, so I could probably get back into it and try to do some CrossFit competitions. But yeah, I'm just, like I said, just letting the wind take me wherever it lands, and just see what's next in store for me.
Now, here's a question: are you stoned right now?
I am not stoned right now, unfortunately.
Okay. No, I can always tell. Like, it's funny because.
Yeah, you called me out though at the Friday Night Fights. You knew I was.
I was. And I was like, yes, I caught him as you were eating that amazing-looking sandwich.
Yeah.
So now, speaking of that sandwich, man, what's your diet right now being in Thailand? I know you have one of your book, 4 weeks. I believe it's like 4 weeks to...
Fuel the Fighter is one. And yeah. Then Cut Refuel Fight is my weight cutting guide.
Yeah, so I know you have like a ritual when you're fighting, which you follow one of those as your blueprint. But what's your diet like right now that you're in Thailand? And, you know, like we were saying previously, the food's different. The supplements may be not as available.
Yeah, for the most part, I don't have to worry about cutting weight, at least right now, because the fights in this area, they just kind of match you up. They just eye you down, and you kind of look like his size, so you can fight him. You know how that is. So it's kind of it's a good thing and a bad thing, because you could be fighting someone twice your size, but you don't have to worry about cutting weight, so you're not as depleted. But getting back to the diet, is my morning usually consists of – we used to get an all-you-can-eat breakfast, but the money kind of added up, and even though it was only like $8 to $10 per person – after doing that every single day, it really adds up. So we ended up buying ourselves a hot plate and a tea kettle. So this way we're able to eat oatmeal and eggs in the morning. So that usually be my first breakfast. I eat, I train. Then after I train, I would supplement with a post-workout recovery drink. Then once that settles in my stomach, I'll have a second breakfast of usually this place I'm staying at, Cafe Siam. They have this amazing menu of like breakfast foods that you can't find in Thailand for the most part. So I'm still able to have my bacon, my eggs, my potatoes, all that kind of stuff in the morning, which I'm really, really thankful for. After that, I usually munch out on some Thai food, usually consists of some fried rice, chicken, pork, some morning glory, like vegetables, and whatever really just looks tasty at the time. Then again, have another post-workout thing. And then at nighttime, I'll usually have some more Thai food, or we'll branch out and try some, I don't even know, like Italian food or Japanese food. But for the most part, we stick with Thai food because it's good and it's super cheap. And we stick to traditional Western breakfasts for the most part.
That's excellent. You were talking about training and fighting like almost kind of like random opponents, nobody you could prepare for. Out of all the fights that you've had either in the States or Thailand, what's been either the fight that's made you the fighter you are now or the most memorable fight that you have had?
There's two that stick out. My first two fights, they weren't much of fights, to be honest. Like I said, they match you up with guys who are around your size. And I'm not going to lie, I got matched up against guys who were a little bit smaller than me. And I knocked them out in like 30 seconds. for a minute, so I didn't really learn much from my experiences, and it didn't really feel like I fought. But my third fight, they matched me up with a guy who was my size and who had 30-something fights, and that was a challenge, and I thought I could knock him out. I tried to knock him out. I knocked him down like 3 times, but he got back up each time, and then after the second round, my adrenaline wore off. I had that adrenaline dump that we're all aware of if you fought before, that it sucks because you don't realize how tired you are until you sit back down in the corner and you're like, holy fuck, like I can't breathe right now. And I had to fight 3 more rounds with that guy, and I ended up losing, but just the fact that I was able to push past the fatigue and exhaustion and compete with a guy who had 30 more fights than me, it made me realize that I'm actually kind of good at this and that this is something that I want to do. So that was the first fight that I kind of realized that Muay Thai was a calling for me, more or less. The next fight was probably my most recent fight against Chris Williams, who he kind of looks like a superhero.
He's Jack. That guy, honestly, yeah. He's a human anatomy chart.
Yeah, I remember weighing in against him. I was like, all right, he doesn't look too bad. And I felt like I looked bigger than him. And then I stepped in the ring, saw him across the ring. I was like, holy shit, this dude is fucking jacked. And he was he literally gained like probably like 30 pounds by weigh-in days. And I've never been doubtful, I guess, in a fight before. And I wouldn't say I was doubtful in that fight either, but I was like, all right, this is going to be a tough-ass fight. Just because I've seen him fight before, I realized how big he was. And then in the first round, literally in probably like the first half of the first round, maybe the second half of the first round, he threw a chop and blocked it with my arm, and it might have just hurt my arm at first, but it definitely made me think twice about taking kicks. And I remember going back to the corner and telling my corner that there was something wrong with my arm. I couldn't feel my fingers. I couldn't really move my fingers. And then at the end of the second round, I knew my arm was broken. And my corner asked me to stop the fight. I was like, no, it's just the fact that I can't throw a jab. I can't throw a hook. Just want to let you know that. And Brandon, knowing that, not to sound arrogant, but I'm pretty tough. And I've kind of realized that through my fight career that I can go through a lot more pain than I think I can. So even though I knew my arm was broken, I didn't want to lose a fight, especially because it was for the USWKA title. It was against a tough opponent in Chris. I just didn't want to lose the fight, so I kept pushing on. He kept kicking my arm. It hurt like a bitch, but I ended up winning a unanimous decision, which I shouldn't to get, because it could have, honestly, the fight could have went either way. I was at the hometown, New York, so I'm sure the crowd has something to do with that. But the fact that I was able to push through a broken arm for so many rounds and still win a fight was a really enlightening experience, and it was really rewarding as well. And if I were to lose that fight and have a broken arm, the recovery process would have been a lot worse.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was there in the audience. It was kind of cool because before that fight, that's kind of where I started coming in to train with you guys. And it was so awesome just to kind of be there for that whole experience, because I knew something was wrong during that fight. I saw a few times you were wincing, and my brain was going into it. I'm like, okay, he hurt something, and yet you were able to push through that. Man, that's something, you know, even though it sucked, yeah, you broke your arm, that's an experience that when you have students in the future that are complaining about, oh, my quad hurts, my elbow hurts, you can go, really? I won a title with a broken arm, so shut up.
Shut the fuck up, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it was tough. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it really, really hurt, and the adrenaline does help. Once the adrenaline wore off, it hurt a lot more. But just knowing that your body's able to do a lot more than you think you can is one of the reasons I love Muay Thai, is because it really makes you look deep inside you and push yourself past the normal comfort zone that you're used to. And being able to do stuff like that makes you realize that you can do a lot more outside the ring as well, not just inside the ring.
Sean, man, we appreciate all your information that you shared this day. You have some really cool stories, and you're working on some amazing projects. And just to start to wrap the podcast up, is there anybody you'd like to shout out besides yourself? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, to all my fans and my supporters, without you guys, I want to be able to do what I'm doing. I want to be able to build the site. I want to be able to train full time. So first and most importantly, thank you to my fans and my followers for being so supportive of my journey. Secondly, my girlfriend has been my backbone through my whole career. Since I've been with her, I haven't lost a fight except for the WKA tournaments. I've won 11 in a row with her by my side. She's been there to help take care of me during my broken arm. My parents have been a huge support system for me as well, even though most parents will think their kid's crazy for pursuing a career in fighting. They still think I'm crazy, but they're still behind me 100%. All my old trainers, my training partners. Yeah, I think that's about it.
So is it safe to say when you come back from Thailand, we're going to be beating each other up at Evolution again?
I hope so. Like I was saying before, the city life wasn't really my thing.
I hear you, man. It's too fast-paced.
I probably won't be in the city, but I'll definitely be swinging by the city to say hi to you guys at Evolution and get some training sessions in.
So you're saying we're both going to move to Kentucky and train with Eric Haycraft?
I've actually mentioned moving to Kentucky to my girlfriend. She goes, really? You want to move to Kentucky? I was like, you don't understand. Like, this guy, he has his gym, and he's awesome, and it would be so cool to train with him. But, yeah, I have a lot more convincing to do before we do that, though.
All right, Sean, it was awesome having you on the podcast, and I know I'm sure you got a lot of stuff to do today with the fight coming up. But we just want to thank you for your time and say you're the man, and we can't wait to catch up with you again.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Much appreciated, dude. Keep doing your thing.
Hell yeah. Take care, my brother.
Thanks.